You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, brought to you by Full Sneak Gear. Check out their entire lineup at fullsneakgear.com. Also, be sure to check out our entire stable of podcasts at sportsmansempire.com.
Think you know the Brooks Ghost? Think again. Introducing the all-new, better-than-ever Ghost 16. Now with nitrogen-infused cushioning for lightweight, supreme softness that feels good every step, every street, every single day. So go ahead, take your daily joyride in the all-new nitrogen-infused Ghost 16. It'll turn your everyday miles into everyday endorphins. Let's run there. Head to brooksrunning.com to learn more.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network, brought to you by Onyx Hunt and Onyx Maps. Now, I got to have a little heart-to-heart with you here real quick. I used Onyx Maps on my phone every single day during the hunting season, whether I was out west during my elk hunt, South Dakota mule deer hunt, or my rut vacation in Iowa. I was on my phone using Onyx Maps every part of the day, whether I was looking at terrain features on the topographic and satellite maps that they offer on their app, or if I was leaving a waypoint like a watering hole, or where I left my trail cameras or tree stands, or if I was marking a route from a campsite to a glassing position, or from my truck to a tree stand location. I used Onyx Maps every single day, and I feel like it's an app that made my life a little bit easier. I don't know about you, but there's been times in the past where I have been trying to find a tree stand based off of memory and not off of looking at a map. And I have gotten lost in the dark before. I had to wait till sunup and then you know, find it that way. But that problem does not exist anymore because of Onyx, and there's a ton of other features that I think you guys need to check out. Go to onyxmaps.com and check out all the functionality of the app. Download it to your phone, give it a try, and when you do decide to purchase, enter the discount code NATION20, NATION20, and for new users, you're going to receive 20% off. So, onyxmaps.com.
Welcome to the DIY Sportsman Podcast with your hosts, Garrett Prawl and Boudreaux Boswell. All right, I am here with Nate Sellers on the podcast today. He is the guy behind the Average Jack Archery YouTube channel. It's a YouTube channel that focuses a lot on archery, has some really great content, especially for beginning archers. He's also a pretty avid bow hunter based out of Pennsylvania. Why don't you go ahead, Nate, and tell the listeners a little bit more about yourself and your channel?
Sure. Thanks for having me on, by the way, Garrett. I really appreciate it. So Average Jack Archery started in 2015. I'm a middle school English teacher by trade. So people, say, hey, you're good with archery. You should, put tutorials and teaching videos online. And I said, no one's going to ever want to watch that. And so I decided to put some stuff online, and sure enough, people watched it and just kind of snowballed from there. And now we're just north of 19,000 subscribers. And that is just phenomenal. Just super blessed to be part of the YouTube scene and just keep posting content, keep learning new stuff every single day, traveling, ATA show and seeing new products and meeting new people. And it's just been a fantastic, fantastic start from 2015 to now.
And you help out locally at, some of the archery shops and things like that. So it's not like you're just making this stuff up. Like, you have a lot of experience putting together people's rigs and tuning bows and setting up arrows and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, that's correct. I work at a local shop here in central PA and put many hours in there over the summer when I'm outside of school, and worked on hundreds of bows and thousands of arrows and setups, and work with a lot of archers, young and old, new to the sport, first coming in, dealing with bows that are 20 years old or brand new up from the ATA show. So I've seen a lot of, I don't want to say I've done it all, but I've done most of it. And I'm just really happy and excited to share my my knowledge and my experiences with the world.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's one of the things I like about your channel personally is, when I do archery videos, I feel like sometimes I wonder if, how many people are actually getting something out of it if I go too deep into the weeds. But your channel is very approachable, and it talks about very basic stuff that a lot of guys have legitimate questions about. And I'll even reference some of that stuff too, because I mean, when you try enough stuff, you're bound to have good opinions on, you know, one thing or another, whether it's even like a whisker biscuit versus drop away type thing. Like that's the type of video that, you know, just thousands and thousands of guys that could have questions on are able to just go jump in and find great input on that type of subject.
Yeah. And it seems like a no brainer for guys like you and me and people that have been bow hunting for, you know, a decade, two, 3 decades, you know, they've been trying to drop weight. They've been doing a whisker biscuit. And, you know, for somebody who's brand new, they have no idea. They have no idea the simplicity of the parts, the complexity, the price point, what kind of work goes into tuning those things. There's a lot of different complexities that people just really, they just don't know. And for some of us, it's second nature. And so I really try to approach it at the level one, square one basics, and really just try to make it as fun and introductory as I can, and really try to get people on the right footing to start out with the sport.
So do you find that you get a lot of people that'll go and private message you and ask, you know, individual questions about their own setup?
Oh, all the time. I get emails weekly, you know, of course, the YouTube comments, Facebook, Instagram messages. As a matter of fact, I got two today that I forgot to respond to. But I'll get individual message all the time. Hey, what do you recommend on small, you know, our small diameter arrows worth it? That was a big one at the beginning of hunting season. A lot of broadhead questions, a lot of the old bow questions. They find used stuff on eBay or Craigslist, stuff like that. And as for somebody like me who's been doing it for decades, like I said, I know what to look for in an old bow. I know the differences of a small diameter versus large diameter shaft, arrow weights. But for somebody who started out, I mean, your head could spin in 5 minutes of going on to archery talk or YouTubing and all that sort of stuff. And so I try to be as simple and as matter of fact, but yet very approachable and allow people to answer those or ask those very simple, short questions and get some simple, short, concise answers and get them started on the right foot.
So going off of that topic that you just mentioned, what is your opinion on micro diameter arrows versus standard?
I like, if you're going to shoot a micro diameter arrow, it better be a heavy one. I'm a heavier arrow guy in general. And I shot the Axis and I liked it. My problem with, and I haven't tried certain arrow systems like Gold Tips, like their Kinetics and the Pierces. I have not tried an insert system that's a two piece or as a collar, an outsert system. I've only ever done the Hit system with the Easton Axis and FMJ, and I'm not a huge fan of that. I like a little beefier system up front. I like the small diameter idea. I think shooting a 204, sometimes a 166 would be a really good option for hunting. But for hunting whitetails here in the Northeast, we're not shooting 40, 50 yards. We're not talking about wind drift. We're talking about 20 yards, good penetration, that sort of stuff. So for here, I think it's a little bit overkill. But I think I think mathematically you can't deny that they are excellent for wind drift and certain other things.
Yeah, I'm pretty much in the same boat as you. Sometimes the perceived benefits for certain applications don't have much of a practical benefit for everybody, and they shouldn't just automatically be, you know, lumped into the better category.
Right, and you have to watch out, you know, for certain arrows, like the Hex, for example, the Easton Hex, it's a very light GPI. So now you're talking small diameter, now you're talking light, and now you got to add FOC, you got all those other things. And again, this goes back to people picking arrows, you know, and that sort of stuff. They're like, oh, it looks really awesome. You know, they see on TV people shooting the smaller things, greater penetration, this, that, and the other thing. But if you don't understand the math behind it, or if you don't understand the reasoning behind it, you could be either wasting money on things you don't need or creating a setup that's just going to be inefficient for you. So I like toying with it, but they're not for me at this current time.
Gotcha. So when we first met up in person, I mean, we've messaged, you know, a few times in the past, mm-hmm. just over, you know, Facebook Messenger and whatnot. But the first time that we actually met up face to face was at ATA this year. Was that your first trip to ATA, or have you been there before?
This was my second. This was my second trip. I went back in 2019, and it was just as cool as the first time. This is the first time my wife went with me to run the camera, so that was really cool. But how many times have you gone now?
This is my second time as well.
Okay. Yeah. So we didn't cross paths though last year, obviously. But yeah, it was great. This year was in Indianapolis, so it was cool seeing Louisville set up versus the Indianapolis setup. Yeah, it was a lot of cool stuff this year. I was really excited to get around and film a lot of stuff, see kind of where the industry's headed. I kind of like being really up and being in the know. You know, I work in a local pro shop here in Pennsylvania, and so I like being in the know with the arrows and the broadheads and what the buzz is around the industry. And so that way, when people have questions about stuff that I don't even carry in the shop here in Pennsylvania, I can answer those questions because I've seen it and played with it firsthand.
Yeah. And would you say that you also probably get exposed to things where you're like, wow, we need to start carrying this in the shop locally?
Oh, all the time. Well, and in particularly with, you know, where the industry's headed in a lot of different ways, you know, at ATA, you get to see a lot of bow manufacturers, for example, that people are really interested in shooting that you don't carry. You know, we carry the big ones. We're one of the bigger shops here at PA, so we carry Hoyt, Matthews, Elite, Bowtech, and Diamond. So that carries, you know, covers 90% of your bases. But there's a lot of people that want to shoot a Martin, or they want to shoot a PSC, or they want to shoot a Bear. And so it's just kind of cool because that's the only time I get to play with those things and kind of see where that part of the market is headed. You know, the high-end setups, the budget setups, the carbon setups. It's just nice to be able to have it all right there in front of you and be able to play with it before somebody else gets their hands on it.
Yeah. Did you feel like there was any new technologies in the bow side specifically this year that you thought was interesting or cool?
I mean, I won't deny anybody who follows the channel knows that I in particular really love Elite bows. I've been an Elite shooter for a couple years now, and I really like what they did this year. They offered a bow that has quarter-inch draw length adjustment, which is something we haven't really seen before. You know, most of them are in half-inch increments. And, for example, I like shooting my bow at 30 and a quarter inches, and I've always had to play with the cables and play with the string to get that extra quarter inch out of the module. So that was kind of cool for me this year to, you know, put those bows in hand. But nothing else on the bow side was really all that wild. The Bowtech last year released the whole cam shift. I forget the particular name of it off the top of my head, but you can basically shim a cam over right there on the line by using an Allen screw. That's a unique piece of technology we haven't seen in, I don't think, ever in the industry. But in the bow side, outside of what Elite and Bowtech did, I didn't see personally anything that was really blowing my mind, except for the weird stuff. I shouldn't say weird stuff. The different stuff, like Gearhead,
yeah,
their dual cage risers and that sort of stuff, that they're a little atypical for the market. But
yeah, well, shimming cams definitely sucks.
Yeah.
And
you would know, you're a binary shooter.
Yeah.
You at least
yeah.
Have been, yeah.
And I, when I did have to shim my cams, I used a portable bow press, and that made me feel a little bit nervous. So I was just really careful. But with the Elites, you can now just adjust the pivot on the limb pocket, which is
yes,
very interesting. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They have the whole set technology. So it's still a binary. Now it's a 3-track instead of a 2-track. So that helps with the cam lean, which I think personally that whole thing's blown way out of proportion, but that's a different conversation for a different time. But the whole set technology, you can basically just rolls the limbs over from one side to the other and adjust the limb tip, and it will help with your paper tears, which is pretty cool. That's, again, something we haven't seen in the industry, I don't think ever. So that's a very unique system, and I was really excited to get my hands on, particularly the target bows. You know, not a whole lot of shops carry target bows here in Pennsylvania. It's not a big thing. You have to go to the big shops like Lancaster, for example. And so to be able to handle the target bows from all different brands and be able to play with the SEC technology from Elite on the Result, which is their new target bow, that was pretty cool.
Do you feel like with some of these new, you know, technology advances, particularly in regards to tuning, do you think that that's slowly getting us to a place where we're putting less and less potential work on some of those smaller bow shops? Do you see that becoming an issue moving forward?
I do see it becoming an issue to an extent, but I know what keeps us running at our local shop is the one thing you can't do is if you do not have a bow press. So if you don't have a bow press at home, you can't do things like chain string cables. You can't move your peep. You can't tie in your drop away cord for your rest. And that, I would say, probably ends up being 75% of our market, if you will, is the fact that we have the bow press. And every 2 years, someone's got 2 or 3 years, if you're smart with your string cable use, every 2 to 3 years, you're going to need new string cables. And so we, of course, get repeat customer after repeat customer. And so the tuning aspect, even though it's cool, for most people, they weren't tuning too much as it is. Yeah. They weren't bugging us too much as it is. They just want to be able to pick an arrow off the shelf, put the rest where it kind of should be sighted in and just shoot a bow. That's what they just want to do. I have no problem with that. But I think this some of these technologies go over a good portion of the bow hunting industry's head. I think that, you know, it's cool to have it, but I don't think very many people are going to use it to its full potential.
Yeah, that's a good perspective. I think the only bow that I saw that you I couldn't think of a reason to have a bow press for would be like the APAs, but pretty much everybody yes. else in regards to tuning, right? They have little things that can help here and there, but to your point, if you want to swap cables and string, you're still going to have to press those bows.
You're still going to have, if your cams go out of time, you're still going to have to press it to add twists. You want to move a peep. Some bows, you need to actually put them, you kind of still need to press them a little bit to be able to move draw modules. We had that a problem with some of the Bowtech bows last year. From the factory, the module would be set in the bus cable. And so you actually had to press the bow in order to take the module out, in order to get the bus cable out of the way. But yeah, so there's a lot of things you're still going to need to shop for. You're still going to need that expertise. And so I don't see our business slacking too much in the near future.
For most guys that come in to the shop, I mean, what's like the typical, what's the average hunter setup? Like a 28-inch draw, 29-inch draw, 60 to 70?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a lot of 60 to 70. A lot of guys shooting 60 pounds now. A lot of dudes shooting 60 pounds and lower, which is really cool to see. You know, we don't sell too many 70-pound bows anymore. And if we do, a lot of them back it off to 60 pounds. But, yeah, it's about a 28.5 to 29-inch draw, you know, is where you see. You know, you barely see very many guys at the orangutan length of 30.5 like me. But, yeah, it's about that. And then, you know, a typical arrow, they're not adding any special brass. They're not doing anything special. A lot of mechanical shooters, obviously, for the lack of necessary tuning, if you will, to get them to fly with field points. And it's kind of, I'd say it's probably about a 50-50 split, drop away and whisker biscuits. You know, that's that sort of stuff out here. And, you know, I kind of live in rural Pennsylvania, obviously. And so we have a lot of good old boys, you know, bringing in bows that are, you know, like the old original Bear whitetails from the 90s, you know, we're still putting string cables on those. So it's a good blend. It's a good mix. But yeah, it's about a 28 to 29 inch draw, 50 to 60 pounds and a mechanical broadhead most of the time.
Gotcha. Do you think that, you know, if you were able to kind of impose your wisdom, do you think that a lot of those guys would be better suited with a different setup than what they come into the store wishing or wanting to walk out with?
If a guy asks me my opinion on what they should shoot, you know, if they're having poor results, I'll give them an earful and then some. You know, they'll walk out with a headache. I'll give them a little too much. I always recommend people, if they're first starting out, to use a fixed blade if they don't have any experience. You know, particularly if someone comes in and they're getting a string cable change, and so they have to kind of retune anyway. And they're like, hey, you know, I'm thinking of switching broadheads. I'll be like, I would shoot a cut on contact fixed blade or just a fixed blade in general. I would go up in arrow weight. You know, we sell a lot of lighter GPI arrows, but I strongly recommend to a lot of different people to shoot a heavier weight, shoot something much more manageable and shoot a fixed blade broadhead. And those are really the biggest things I recommend to people.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. Do you guys have... want to set somebody's bow up, do you tune it for them or do you have them kind of run through the motions themselves and tell them what to do and shoot it through paper to kind of get their grip torque input into it and all that kind of
thing? Yeah, no, that's a real good question. So a lot of guys don't want a paper tune. They just want you to stand off to the side and watch their arrow fly down our 20-yard indoor range and just kind of see if it's flying weird. And that's pretty much good for, I'd say, 90% of the guys that come into the shop. You know, they kind of want to be in, get their bow worked on, be done, and get back to hunting. And I totally respect that. But if they want to spend an extra 20, 30 minutes, you know, we'll go down and we'll paper tune and make sure we're really getting as close to a bullet hole as possible. And a lot of people that come in that want a paper tune also don't understand that you really need to be consistent on your end. Paper tuning is not you know, you just shoot it through paper and that's it. Like I had a guy just this past summer brought his bow in and he shot 6 different paper tears with the same arrow and never once moved the rest. He just gripped the bow different every one of his 6 shots. And so, you know, it's knock high this way, then it's left, then it's right, and this, that, and the other thing. And you can't move the rest until you get a consistent paper tear. You can't, you know, adjust the Y on the bus cable to adjust your yoke tension to adjust for a paper tear. And so for most people, I just don't think they're shooting consistently enough in their form to paper tune. But if they want to give it a whirl, I'll be happy to oblige them and try to get that arrow shooting as perfectly as it can out of the bow.
So for a guy like that, that is just all over the map in terms of consistency, is he the type of guy where you maybe would try and steer him toward a mechanical, or do you try and still get him to, you know, improve his form and shoot a fixed in that case?
That's a great question. And I would do what you suggested first. I would get him to shoot a mechanical, and a lower, you know, there's a lot of lower kinetic energy mechanicals on the market. You know, you don't need to be pushing 2 inches, you know, because that arrow is losing energy if it's not shooting straight out of the bow or coming out as straight as it can out of the bow. And so there's a lot of smaller cutting diameters. There's some lower kinetic energy type mechanical broadheads. And I happily push those people to that if they just can't get that consistency and that perfect arrow flight. Because not that you need perfect arrow flight for a fixed blade to tune well, but it does help. It does help in the long run. There are plenty of mechanical options now to accommodate for poor arrow flight.
Right. And then I suppose another thing that they could probably tack on would be, you know, just more drag, different fletching configuration, 4 fletch or longer vanes or something like that to really help stabilize in the back
right.
end.
It's uncommon to have guys want something fletched with other than blazer vanes. So I know as someone who's fletched a couple 100,000 arrows, it seems like in his lifetime, I end up mostly just doing a really hard 3 to 4 degree helical, you know, either right or left as best they can. You know, very few guys want to shoot a 4 fletch. Very few guys want to shoot a different vein other than a blazer. So if they're having something like that, I'll pour that on, but that's pretty much as far as it goes.
I think that's cool that you even offer that. I remember some of my first experiences going into archery shops, it was either you got the, you know, 2 degree offset blazer or nothing. You know, that was your only choice. So
yeah, we'll set them up. We have about, I'd say, about 6, 7, or 8 different bits and burgers set up at different degrees, right and left. And then we have a couple of like the boning blazer jig, you know, which is a fixed plastic polymer jig. And that gets an extreme helical on a blazer vane. So, we have all different types of configurations to try to meet the needs of people the best.
Do you find that between the blazer jig and the Bitzenberger, there's a big difference in, you know, quality and consistency, or can you use the plastic blazer or boning jig and just do a really careful job and get similar results?
You can use the blazer jig and you got to go slow and steady. The tolerances aren't there. And as someone who uses a Bitzenberger habitually, you know, I feel like I can fletch arrows in my sleep nowadays. That boning jig takes a little bit of time. It's a learning curve for sure. But I think you can, if you really do focus and go slow, pay attention, clean off your excess glue, all the typical stuff you would do with a jig, you can get very similar results.
Okay. What's your personal setup? I imagine you have a different setup for hunting and target. What's your hunting rig look like?
Right now I have 3 different hunting arrows going because I just can't decide. And I love to tinker too much, not as much as you do, but I tinker a fair amount. Most of them, they're all gold tip shafts. I'm a big gold tip shooter. They make brass inserts that are readily available. So I have one setup that's currently about a 570. I have one setup that's about a 510, and then I have one that's a 460. I'm shooting all Magnus broadheads, either the Buzz Cuts or the Black Hornets. Some of them are run brass. Some of them I'm running gold tip regular inserts, but I'll put in grub screws that I got at like Lowe's or something. Kind of like it's basically a substitute of the Fact Weight system that they have. Grub screws that screw into the back of the insert and, you know, play with 50 up front, 60 up front, something like that. I kind of get a tune I want. And then most of the time I shoot all white blazers on the back end. Sometimes I'll go with a 3-inch boning X-vane just for aesthetics. But most of the time, a Blazer gets the job done, and they're built like bricks, so that's they're hard to destroy. And I like running knock bushings or pin knocks off the end of my arrow. I do a lot of target shooting crossover 3D with the shafts, and so it helps with glance outs. You can get lighted knocks that go down to 1.66 nowadays. So pop out the plastic, throw in the 1.66, and you have a beautiful hunting rig.
Gotcha. Do you find that there's much trajectory difference within, say, 30 yards between those three arrow setups that you're running?
I would say no more than probably 2 to 3 inches at the most. I shoot an Elite Energy 35 as my hunting rig, and it is slow as molasses when it comes to flinging out heavy arrows. In terms of the bow hunting distances, no, I don't really adjust the pins at all. I'll maybe hold a hair high with the big one, the 570, and right on with the 460. But I don't see much of a trajectory distance until you get to that 40, 50-yard mark, and then I might as well be lobbing hand grenades because it's definitely diving off pretty quick.
Yeah, it's pretty consistent with what I've noticed. You know, inside 15, 20 yards, you can really vary a lot and not really notice much of a practical difference. But then once Correct. You stretch it out, that's where it really starts to become noticeable.
Yeah. And I mean, and you know, up there in the north, here in the northeast, you know, our bow hunting shots are 15, 20 yards. And particularly in the early season, when you have full green up, I mean, you can't see more than 30, 40 yards in a lot right. of the places I eat up here in the mountains. And so that's why I feel very comfortable tinkering with arrow weights that are well over 100 grains of each other. Now, I only carry one setup into the woods. I don't carry a golf bag, if you will, of different arrow sizes. I will only carry the one, but I know that my tune can stay pretty consistent. I don't have to do too much rest tweaking to get the tears that I want through paper.
Have you ever run mechanicals as like a, you know, third or fourth broadhead choice in your quiver?
Yeah, I've run a lot of smaller cut mechanicals. A couple years ago, actually when I first started the channel, so it had been 5 years ago, I was shooting Magnus all as a kid, and then I tried the NAP Shockwave, which is like only like an inch and a half. You know, it's nothing extravagant. It's an over-the-top mechanical. And I had great success with it. It worked just fine. And I like an over-the-top. I don't like the rear deploying style. I just feel like I've had, you know, buddies had them open in their quiver, the little O-rings break, this, that, and the other thing. And so I'll run a smaller. I really like the Rocket, the original Rocket steelhead. In 125 grain in particular, they were just built like little tanks, and they just cut really nice holes, and they flew like darts. I mean, they're so compact. So I'll sometimes stick them in the quiver, but I haven't used a mechanical in 5 years. So.
Gotcha. Yeah, I'm so OCD about this kind of stuff that I almost have like three different arrow like possibilities in my quiver. And I'd like to just have one, but I'm always thinking like, well, what if I'm sitting on the ground and there's a lot of grass? Well, I want this kind of setup. Mm-hmm. And if it's more of an open setup and it's kind of windy, then I want to shoot this kind of arrow. And, you know, if it's thick and I'm just worried about penetration, like I want to shoot this kind of setup. It's hard to choose.
Oh, yeah. And I wish I had the gumption to do that. But part of my OCD is that I just got to keep everything consistent. Like I want to know the first arrow I pull out is the same as the second, same as the third. I would love the ability to run the golf bag, but my brain just doesn't work like that. I like to have all my ducks in a row.
Yeah. The one concept that I keep trying to, you know, keep at the forefront of my thought process when I'm choosing this kind of stuff is, you know, practical significance. You know, I might take three different arrow setups and they might hit, you know, a couple inches, let's say 1 or 2 inches off from one another at 60 yards. And I think, okay, well, I know that now. But inside of 30, that's like a quarter, half inch difference, and it's just not practically significant enough for me to, you know, notice a difference. I'm much more likely to miss due to me screwing up the shot rather than the minute differences between the setups. So that's what I always have to kind of keep telling myself.
Yeah, at bow hunting distances, 90% of the time, it does not matter. Let it rip. Put the pin on and let it rip. I got to keep telling myself that because I was a nervous wreck when I shot my doe. In November, I just picked the bow off the shelf, didn't tune it, threw an arrow. It was like 9 o'clock at night. I turned the floodlights on in the backyard. I shot, got everything, threw a broadhead on it. Looked like it flew okay. And I just was in cold sweats all morning. Like if I have a deer come in at like 20 yards, I'm just going to miss by like 4 feet. I'm like, no, you're an idiot. You're going to be like an inch off at the most. And sure enough, I ended up drilling it at 22 yards. So it's you just tell yourself to calm down every now and then and just hunt and enjoy it. Forget the analytics. Just hunt and enjoy it.
Yeah. Yeah. There's nothing better also when you draw back and the deer takes up half your sight pin housing.
Oh, yeah. It's fantastic. Which pin do I pick? I don't care. Just do one of them. Yeah, it's there's some guys I know that are like, yeah, I just pulled up and I didn't even use the pins. That's how close they were. That's a little too close for me. That's a little too close. But yeah, that's fantastic. You pull up. Well, you used the EZV mm-hmm. at certain points last year. But did you use it this year at all?
Yeah, I used it this year.
I couldn't remember.
Yeah, I used it pretty much the entire season. Yeah. I actually, over the summer, I shot a lot with pins because when I'm shooting spots at the range, I'm a little bit more precise with pins. Mm-hmm. But then in preparation for the mm-hmm. season, I swapped back over and made sure everything was sighted back in.
Yeah, I will say that was a cool thing. I had never handled one until ATA this year. I went over and met Aaron and stuff. And I love the idea. It's built like a tank, you know, picking one up. They're milled out of 60-61-1. What you say there is something that I struggle with is that I just shoot at spots year round. I'm shooting outdoor, shoot indoor, I'm shooting 3D, and I really have to pick a specific spot. So as cool as it is and as unique as it is, I don't know if it would be something that would end up being for me, but it's definitely a unique sight. It was cool to see you guys use it in action.
Yeah, I think for most guys to get the best benefit out of it, I think there's two maybe groups. One is the guys that just struggle with pins. Whether it's, you know, old eyes or, you know, maybe mild target panic or something where they just struggle putting a pin on something. And then the other group would be the people who, you know, don't necessarily have a problem with pin sights, but they want that extra potential benefit of using it as a range finding tool. And I think the way that those people benefit best is by just practicing a lot, using that sight on 3D targets, on, you know, basketball size thing, right? Just using it the way it was intended, flip that thing around and just practice sizing up your quote unquote kill zone and just shooting right. Like that and just getting used to using it that way. And then when it gets time to actually hunt with it, you can flip it back around and still have those tick marks to fall back on. But if you just use it as a pin sight and don't ever use the V as an aiming system and you don't have any issues with target panic or anything like that, then, I mean, they're both can be really effective, especially at, you know, whitetail distances.
Did you still find that when you were shooting, in particular at, you know, full size game or drawing back on game, that you still were guesstimating the distance between you and the critter, or were you just pulling up the V and just like, yeah, that's going to be that?
Usually, especially if it's a, you know, a saddle or tree stand type setup, I'll still kind of pre-range everything just to get a general idea of what's kind of around me. And even if I have a deer that's just kind of hanging out at like 40, 45 yards, and I'm not sure if it's going to get any closer and I have the time, I'll still pull a rangefinder out and just range it, because still to me, you know, getting an exact range and being able to use pins or tick marks, that's still kind of my most precise. But if I have that kind of situation where a deer pops up and I just don't have the time and I'm running the camera or something, I'll just draw back and then would just basically use that V, say it's 30, 35, I'll be able to figure it out with that. And it'll be, you know, it'll be close enough on the elevation that it's going to go right in the kill zone.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That was something I wondered, you know, and I don't know very too many EZV shooters. If you're still really trying to estimate the range, and I'll be upfront and honest, I am garbage at estimating range, particularly in the hardwoods. You know, I get tunnel vision, anything past 25 yards, it's a crapshoot for me. Mm-hmm. So, you know, kind of always wondered if you're still ranging it, if you're still guesstimating, if you're actually pulling out a rangefinder and still trying to figure that out, even before you pull up the V up on the animal. It's cool. I think it's a unique idea, putting that on a bow sight instead of just on a military aspect.
Yeah. Yeah. And of course the thing that's different about military aspect versus what we're trying to do is, you know, they're trying to range based on fixed size, more or less objects. Whereas, you know, even though things should be fairly close within the animal realm, you know, per the testing that Aaron's done, if you're not used to looking at what that actual kill zone should look like, it can still throw you off if you're not practiced at all, right? Like, I have a screenshot right. from one of my videos earlier this year where I had a buck walking behind a fawn, and he was standing about 5 yards past the fawn and looked like he was about 3 times the size, right? So, so there's, and you know, talking about down south deer versus up north deer versus elk, right? There's, you have to, basically the best thing I can come up with is you just got to try and practice shooting and framing the size animal you're going to plan on shooting to be able to get used to that if you want to be able to use it the most effectively.
Right, right. You really have to pick your critter in your particular area more than anything else. Yeah.
But yeah, I'll probably still use it next year. What I'll probably do is, you know, whenever somebody asked about that site in particular, they ask if I'm going to, you know, if I'm, you know, full on that site or if I'm going back to pins. And it's like, well, I own both styles of sites. I'll continue to use both, right? I'll just pick the right tool for the job, basically, is kind of how I look at it. I think they both can be effective, and they both, either one's not for everybody, right? So you actually, you mentioned you shot a doe in November, and I didn't realize that. I know you shot the buck early season.
Yes, because that got on film.
Yeah, correct. I saw that video. Was the doe after the break? Was that like late November, or was that early November?
It was like the first. So our archery season here in Pennsylvania, we only get the first 2 weeks of November, and then there's a break until the Monday. Well, this year is the Saturday after Thanksgiving, and then firearm season opens. So I think it was the first week of November, first 10 days in November, I shot a doe. But yeah, I was by myself. I ended up going live on YouTube. It was a wild, crazy story. I ended up going live on YouTube out of the tree because where I was sitting, it was just nice, calm morning. You know, I had a day off from work, and I ended up having a coyote come from the exact same direction while I was on YouTube live. It was the most bizarre thing possible. And I was like, oh, this will be awesome. If I get me shooting this coyote, now it wouldn't have been on screen because I was using my phone, but if I got this coyote on kill on YouTube live, that'd have been the wildest hunt I'd ever been on. But yeah, I shot her in the morning and there at the beginning of November, and it's something that I'm starting to see more and more of these days, shooting a heavier arrow and shooting these super sharp cut on contact broadheads. Is I'm getting these deer, you know, the buck I shot last year, the doe I shot last year, and then the buck and doe I shot this year, I'm hitting them and they're running less than 40 yards and then they're just kind of stopping and they're just kind of hanging out, and all of a sudden they just tip over.
Yeah.
You know, there's none of this, like, you know, hauling like their tails on fire. And it's something I hadn't seen really before. I vividly remember when I was shot mechanicals 5 years ago, I shot a doe, and I mean, she took off. I mean, it was a full pass through. It was a great shot, but she easily was hauling for about 100-150 yards before she expired. Now, it was an easy blood trail, you know, very successful, but just the past couple of years shooting a very highly efficient 500 plus grain arrow set up with a cut on contact broadhead, I'm just getting great blood trails, and the deer just aren't running off as far. Now, I've made really good shots, really lethal shots on all these critters. But it's just something I've seen this year that I have not seen in the past, to this extent, at least.
Yeah. I guess I've kind of seen it both ways. I've definitely had deer do like what you said, where they just, you know, it's like they weren't quite sure what happened, and then they just kind of tip over. But I've also had it where I've hit them with, you know, efficient enough setups where you think you miss, right? Because it's just, it makes no noise when it hits the animal, and they'll just take off and go like the 150, 200 yards just because that's how far they could run and the amount of time that it took for them to expire. And I don't know exactly what causes it to happen with some animals and not others. I don't know if it has to do with maybe a rib gets, you know, chopped on one, whereas another one, it goes between the ribs and they can feel that more than other times, or if it's just, you know, how wired they were that day.
Yeah.
I had a doe that I shot with my longbow that she went about 200 yards, which is a single bevel. And I thought I missed it first. And then I've also had, you know, deer where, a couple of years ago, I shot one with it's kind of similar to a Magnus. It was a Steel Force head that I was using. So, you know, pretty similar style of head. And that one did the, you know, 30 yards, stop, look around, and just tip over. So definitely, it's been a mix, which is, you know, when I see a lot of people talking about the heavy arrow thing, a lot of guys get that reaction, it seems like, where they don't go very far. So I don't know why, but occasionally I'll get the experience where it's the opposite, where even if you hit it with a super efficient setup and it goes 14 inches into the dirt, they'll still take off.
Yeah. Yeah. I just don't know what it is. I remember as a kid, this happening both ways, I've been bow hunting now for 17 years. And so, I've killed a lot of critters and seen a lot of different things. I feel like with the heavy arrow thing in particular, the past couple of years, just the whole situation's quieter. I vividly remember, and also the bows have gotten much quieter and much more efficient on their own right as well. But just the shot, I just feel like I can hear everything during the shot. Maybe it's because I'm more attentive, but I can hear the bow, I can hear the arrow, I can barely hear it as it hits the animal, and then it's just so quiet afterwards. There's none of this just hauling off, none of this big crack, as it hits the animal. Mm-hmm. We all watch it on YouTube and TV. We all know the thump, thump, as it, leaves the bow and then hits the animal. And I just feel like I just don't get that anymore, or at least I haven't gotten that in the past couple of years. And so that's just something interesting that I've seen. I've been more attentive to and paying attention more with bow hunting with these heavier setups, how much more efficient and how much quieter my setup is. And as we said earlier, with only losing an inch or two of velocity over a typical bow hunting distance, I just don't see any downside. And I just don't see me going back to anything less than 450 anytime soon.
Yeah. Yeah. I could see myself if I go out west and I want a certain trajectory to shoot, 60, 70, whatever the yardage might be, I might try and get back up to like a 270, 280. Mm-hmm. But for whitetails, I've shot between 230 and 250 for the past couple of years and haven't had any issues. So, with the exception of those like rare shot opportunities where you do have an opportunity to like 40 yards and you look at where your 20 yard pin is and there's brush in the way and you're thinking, well, mm-hmm. if I had a little flatter trajectory, maybe I could pull this off. But other than that, I don't see many downsides to it.
Yeah. I was surprised and working in the bow shop, I've been very surprised when people also come in or like, I started doing this thing. I put a brass insert in my arrow and I'm just so much quieter. My bows just seem so much smoother. I get less hand shock. I get this. And it's just really cool to see this kind of catching on the past couple of years. And I'm glad that I'm become a part of it and become an advocate for it. Cause I think a lot of people are getting happier. And of course, all the guys that have been shooting aluminum since the 60s are like, duh, we've been telling you this for like 50 years. If you shoot a, 11 grains per inch arrow, it's much quieter and the whole kit and caboodle and your penetration goes through the roof and your momentum goes through the roof. And who cares about velocity? Let's enjoy the hunt and let's enjoy harvesting critters. So I think it's cool that we're seeing the resurgence these days.
Yeah, absolutely. Have you ever tried shooting just like a monster heavy arrow out of your bow just to see what it feels like and sounds like?
I have a whole bunch of, I think they're 2514s. Aluminum super slam, they're digital camo. I think they are 14 grains per inch and they're 31 inches long. You can do the math there. I shoot them for indoor. I put 200 up front. I think the total weight is like 7 and change, something like that. And it's just like, I feel like the bow has recoil when that thing goes off. And it's all you hear is the rest falling, it seems like, which is just, it's just so, so cool. But I mean, you could outrun that arrow. It's like tossing a water balloon. I don't know if I'll hunt with it. I kind of like my indoor arrows cause they're expensive. But if I'm tempted again, I tried it a couple years ago shooting aluminums. I'm kind of tempted to try it again this year, this upcoming fall in 2020, but we'll see.
You'd be a good person to answer this question. When it comes to shooting heavier arrows, do you find that the let off that a bow has makes a significant difference in how forgiving it is when compared to shooting light arrows?
I would say yes, it does. Because I've shot both in the spectrum. I've shot everything from 70% let off with a 320 grain arrow for 3D all the way up to these 700 behemoths with 85, 90% let off for indoor, which is my personal preference. And I've seen that lighter arrow and particularly the lower let off, so like only 70%, it is not forgiving. I don't care if you shoot it out of a 7.5-inch brace height bow. If you're off, if you're torquing, if you're tilting, if you're canted, forget it. It's not going to go where it's going to go. But that slower moving, often larger fletched arrow with a higher let off percentage and just a little bit more give, just, I don't know. I can seem to be, you know, on a standard Vegas phase, I can seem to be in the red and the eight and I'll still hit an X. I just don't know what it is about it. So I think, yeah, I really do. Slower, particularly heavier arrow with a better let off situation, I find to be much more accurate than a lower let off percentage and a faster setup.
Huh. I'm glad to get your thought process on that, because I've shot the same let off for several years now, and I really haven't had much ability to be able to tweak it all that much, other than, mm-hmm. you know, just moving around where my draw stop is. But in my mind, I was kind of thinking, if you have a really heavy arrow in a very high let off, there's such a little holding weight at full draw that when you fire the shot, there's a small amount of force that's starting to push on the backside of that heavy arrow, and you probably are sitting for a lot longer period of time when that arrow's right next to your face and it's just sitting there starting to slowly accelerate, versus if you had maybe a 65 or 70% let off, you'd get more of that push right away and maybe it would spend less time, you know, just kind of hanging there by your face. But I haven't been able to, you know, actually test it out.
Yeah, and I will say that, you know, for most people that are shooting the lower percent, it all depends on the shooter, of course. But if you're shooting a heavier arrow with a lower percentage let off, you know, 65-70%, those guys are, I don't want to be too general, but those are your top end dudes. Those aren't guys like me. Those aren't guys shooting bow hunter class. Those are guys that are shooting spiral cams. You know, they shoot competition, you know, 365 days a year. And I don't think it matters what arrow you put out of them. I think they're going to knock your socks off regardless with accuracy. But I think for those of us that shoot bow hunter class and are used to a higher let off system, shooting that heavy arrow, I don't think it makes a hill beans difference. But perhaps for those top end guys, those guys that are shooting in the open pros, the guys that are shooting in the open amateur classes and the high level, that might make a difference. That you do make a good point with it sitting there longer. But I don't know for those of us that are shooting, you know, 80% of us that are shooting regular bow hunter setups, if it matters all that much. But that'd be an interesting thing to check out.
Gotcha. When you shoot in the bow hunter type classes, what's the restrictions on that? Is it stabilizer length, sight type? What all goes into that?
The stabilizer length is pretty universal. It's 12 inches or less. You can have a back bar if you want, but again, 12 inches or less. Depends on the shoot. Lancaster Classic's coming up this week. They'll let you shoot up to a 27. Certain shoots, there's a shoot I go to here in Pennsylvania, they only let you shoot 23 diameter size. So in terms of sights, it's universal. You can shoot pins, a pin or multiple pins, no lenses. If you have bad eyesight, you could shoot a verifier in your peep sight so you can see your pin, so it's not a blurry mess. But outside of that, any pound that you want, you could shoot a blade rest, you could shoot a drop away, you could shoot a whisker biscuit if you want. You can shoot any release style that you want, but it's the stabilizer in the sight that's pretty universal, and then the arrow diameter kind of depends on the shoot.
Yeah, if you're going to run, you know, a setup for a bow hunter class shoot, would you typically like to shoot exactly what your hunting setup is, or would you try and tweak within the limitations of the bow hunter class to try and shoot a better score?
I shoot pretty close to what I'm hunting with. So I'll shoot arrows that I would hunt with, at least. So, I shoot 23-15 aluminums, which is something I would totally take into the woods. I do shoot a single pin, although I don't shoot a single pin while hunting, but that's just, I don't need all that extra clutter of pins. I'm shooting one spot at 20 yards. I shoot the exact same stabilizer setup and I shoot the exact same drop away setup. I'll run a blade rest, when 3D starts to kind of pick up in the early spring. And I'll run a blade rest for both shafts at the same time. But I really like I shoot a Hamsky Trinity, and that'll handle both indoor and outdoor setups no problem without having to tweak too much. So that's a good crossover limb driver. But I already shoot long axle-to-axle bows. I hunt with a 35 and a 39-inch axle-to-axle bow, and I absolutely love hunting with that kind of length of bow. So that hasn't changed much, and And I try to keep everything else as close as I can. I'll shoot a hinge release. I do shoot that. I shoot a caliper for hunting. I'll shoot a three-finger, four-finger hinge release just to give me a little bit something cleaner, a little more consistent, and particularly when I'm shooting indoor and I'm shooting 60 arrows in a sit. I really need something consistent to help me throughout that, you know, hour-long shoot.
Why not shoot either a hinge or, I guess, probably more likely like a thumb-style release, three or four-finger in the woods versus the caliper?
The caliper is just what I'm kind of used to. I'm kind of an old fogey in that way. I've shot that for years, and I'm going to stick with it. I shot a thumb button, a true ball thumb button, a couple of years ago, and I just couldn't get used to it for hunting, just the way it was on my face. In the late season, I wear some sort of face mask. I can't do the camo face paint in the late season. It's just too cold. Really, even by the time my rut rolls around, it's just too cold. And that thumb button just wasn't getting the anchor that I liked for bow season. And so the caliper release, I was able to get the knuckles on my face where I like them. And I shoot very consistently with it. I just prefer a hinge release.
Gotcha. That's one that's still on my list to play around with. Done the tension, the thumb, the caliper, but hinge is still something that I haven't yet dove into. Maybe this year.
Haven't dove into at all, or haven't dove into for hunting?
At all. I've done the thumb for I say target. When I say target, I mean like practicing for hunting at the target range, not actually like going to shoots. But I've done the thumb for hunting. I've done tension, not for hunting, but I'll shoot it at the range, try and keep me honest, especially if I feel like I'm starting to get, you know, a little bit of anticipation building up. And then sure. I've run the caliper for years for hunting too. The hinge, I suppose there's still benefit of having that other option to bounce back and forth with, right? I mean, if I shot target, then I for sure, I think, you know, if I did it competitively, I think I for sure would get one. But I'm kind of, you know, trying to determine if it's really going to give me that much added benefit to play around with if I'm strictly practicing for hunting, if it's just another thing that I can add into the mix to help keep me honest, or if I'm, you know, just as well off sticking with the tension and the thumb and the caliper and just switching off between those three.
Yeah, knock on wood, that when I first started shooting a hinge, everybody's like, oh, you'll punch yourself in the face. You'll learn in a hurry, you know, because you just accidentally rolled the whole thing over. I have not done that yet. In my 16 years of shooting, I've yet to punch myself in the face shooting a hinge release. But I will say it, during the hunting season, if I start feeling that I'm getting too friendly with my caliper, too friendly with my index finger, I will shoot the hinge just in the backyard with my hunting setup, just so I can keep myself honest and stay with it and really pull through the shot and do what I'm supposed to. And I think that's beneficial. I don't think you need to shoot a hinge. If you're shooting a back tension, you're shooting a thumb button, just something different than what you would naturally hunt with or practice with all the time. That's really what's going to keep you honest in the long run.
Yeah. I'll be honest too. There's a lot of times when if the shot is close enough, I'll admit I punch the trigger almost intentionally just because I know I'm not going to miss and I just want to time it perfectly.
Yeah. I did that this year. I just put it up. I put it there. I waited. She wouldn't stop. She would not stop walking. And I bleated at her in the first shooting lane. She would not stop. Bleated at her in the second shooting lane. She would not stop. I had one more shooting lane. She would not stop. I put the pin in the lane, wait till her brisket came in, and I just punched it and just caught her right in the middle of the lungs. And, you know, she ran off and expired there at 40 yards. And I just remember sitting there in the tree going, that could have gone horribly wrong. If she had stopped, if she had actually finally stopped, I would have caught her probably right in the front in a non-lethal area and had one of those horrifying track jobs we all don't want to have. But thankfully she just, you know, just didn't listen and just kept on walking. But yeah, there are times, plenty of times, where you just got to pull up and shoot because you want it to happen and happen now, and you need it to happen and happen now. So it's a good practice skill to have.
Yeah. One other thing I was going to ask you about that, the PA hunting structure. So in addition to having that thing split up in terms of not being able to hunt kind of that peak breeding time, you guys also still can't hunt on Sundays, right? That is correct. Is that, I mean, I see stuff on Facebook where, you know, petitions and things will go around. Is there actually any traction that they're going to get rid of Sunday or start allowing Sunday hunting?
So Governor Wolf actually signed a bill this past October, November, that will take place in effect for the 2020-2021 season, that now they have given the Game Commission 3 Sundays, one during archery season, one during firearm season, and then one during the late season to open it up to hunting. And we have not learned all the logistics yet, if they're going to allow it on public and private, you know, if it's going to be kind of a soft opening. We don't know how it's going to work. But the Game Commission is allowed to pick 3 days this year, this upcoming season, for the public to hunt on Sunday.
I wonder if they're going to treat that as kind of a trial period type test, and if it goes well, then they'll continue to expand it. Or, I mean, you guys as a state are probably, you're pretty resistant to change.
Not as bad as it makes it. It's funny because that you mentioned that, because it sounds to anybody who's not in Pennsylvania, it sounds like the hunters of Pennsylvania don't want this change. The people of Pennsylvania don't want this change. Every person I talk to wants this change. Every person I talk to wants this change. And I live in rural Trump God's country, Pennsylvania, and we want this change. And predominantly is now in our area, and, you know, and all of us that have, you know, being an educator, I see this a lot with the kids. Their parents and their kids have 17 different things to do on a Saturday, and the only day they have for them to hunt is Sunday. And all they want to do is just take their kid out with a crossbow to go hunting, and they can't do it. And so, you know, people would have 2 days, and, you know, I would literally, because I'm a weekend warrior myself, I would double the days I can hunt during archery season. You know, if we get a bad day on Saturday, that's it. That was my whole week of hunting. You know, I'll have a random day off or something. But everybody that I talk to really wants this change, and change permanently, because we're one of the last few states left in the country that doesn't allow Sunday hunting at all. And that's kind of, it's kind of become an embarrassment, I think, for us as a hunting culture, that we are the only dudes that aren't posting buck pictures on a Sunday afternoon. So it's, you know, we're kind of ready to move on. It's 2020. Let's get with the rest of the program. Let's get our kids hunting. We're losing hunting numbers by the thousands and thousands, even here in such a high hunter density state. And we really, really could use Sunday hunting here permanently, every Sunday for every part of the season.
Yeah, as an outsider looking in, I think that would be a good change from that perspective, for sure. Do you ever go out of state, especially considering you have kind of limited days inside Pennsylvania?
No, I have never left the state. It's funny, I growing up as a kid, I lived in so many different places across the country. You know, Oklahoma and Texas and Pennsylvania and California. But when I finally settled down and, you know, have my own family now I never leave the state except to go to the ATA show once a year. So I really would like to go. You know, there's a lot of opportunities to hunt out of state. I actually spoke to Greg Godfrey down there at the ATA. He's like, you should come out with us and this, that, and the other thing. So I might try it this year. We'll see how it goes, though. We'll see what kind of people. I don't feel comfortable doing it by myself. I think it kind of defeats the purpose. If I did go out, I'd want to go with other people and enjoy the camaraderie, mm-hmm. and enjoy the fun and the laughs and the Shirt Tail Chronicles and enjoy the successes together as well.
Yeah, that's definitely one of the most fun things about an out-of-state trip is the group. I'm kind of in the same boat. Usually if I'm going on an out-of-state trip, it's with at least one other person, and sometimes with a group of a few, and it definitely makes the trip more fun.
Oh, it looks like it. I love following, you know, you and Sam Soholt and the THP guys and Greg and the Tether team. Someone, like I said, doesn't leave the state. It's cool to watch that on YouTube, and I think a lot of us that don't get to travel, or a lot of us that aren't in the YouTube community, just feel so empowered watching you guys doing that. I think it's just a really cool thing, you know, because while we're sitting here freezing our butts off in the Northeast, you know, we're watching people travel the country hunting in Mississippi and Missouri and all this really cool stuff. And it's such a unique dynamic now. And it's just really awesome to see it unfold. And those of us that are just good old boys living at home, we just really appreciate what everybody's doing and sharing it with the world.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, taking up about an hour of your time or so, and I think we covered some great stuff. Really appreciate you taking the time. Obviously, we mentioned at the beginning that people can follow your stuff on the Average Jack Archery YouTube channel. The hunt that you had filmed this fall was on a different channel, though. That was on...
The channel is AJ Hunts. If you go on to my main channel, you can find I have a video where I explain it. We know YouTube's weird with putting, you know, killing animals on YouTube. So I have a link to that channel, and I tried to self-film this year, and it did not go so well. So there's nothing else yet on that. But turkey season, I plan to start putting up some content and continue to enjoy the outdoors over there at AJ Hunts.
Awesome. Well, like I said, appreciate you taking the time this evening to jump on the podcast.
Well, thanks for having me, buddy. I really appreciate it.